Hi, Andy.
Hi, Victoria.
Today, we're going to speak with a metabolic psychiatrist who recommends a diet quite different from the one you usually recommend.
Now, this must be a new field, metabolic psychiatry.
Yes. So let's get Dr. Georgia Ead on. Dr. Georgia Ead is a practicing psychiatrist with expertise in nutritional and metabolic psychiatry. She practiced at Smith College and Harvard University and offered students nutrition-based approaches as an alternative to psychiatric medication. Dr. Ead co-authored an inpatient study that used the ketogenic diet for treatment-resistant mental illness. She has an accredited course about ketogenic diets for mental health practitioners, and her new book, Change Your Diet, Change Your Mind, was released in January. Welcome, Georgia.
Thank you very much for having me.
I was hoping you could begin by explaining a relatively new term, metabolic psychiatry.
Yes, it is a relatively new term. It's a new subspecialty of psychiatry, a really exciting time to be a psychiatrist, because for the past 75 years or so, we have been thinking about the biological root causes of psychiatric conditions as chemical imbalances in the brain, imbalances in neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. But this new subspecialty of psychiatry, which has really just been around just about 5 years or so, focuses on underlying drivers of mental health conditions, which we have a lot more control over and which we can really influence strongly through lifestyle, diet in particular. So metabolic psychiatry is looking at the metabolic drivers of mental health conditions, things like glucose and insulin regulation, brain energy production, and some of the other influences that change the way neurotransmitters are produced and regulated in the brain, such as inflammation and oxidative stress. So all of these things can be tied strongly to our dietary choices, which is good news because that gives us a lot more control over how we feel, how we think, how we behave, and perhaps even our intellectual future.
It is an exciting time. And I always love to hear people talk about the immense impact we can have with nutrition and also with other dietary changes. I guess I want to go back a little bit in time to where the idea of using a ketogenic diet came from. And it comes in part that we have long used anti-seizure medications to treat people with treatment-resistant depression and other conditions. And we also have decades of experience using a ketogenic diet in kids who have seizure disorders that are intractable or very difficult to treat. So it kind of got extrapolated. And one of the things that I know you've been involved in is building up a stronger evidence base.
Yes, exactly. So many people, when they think of the ketogenic diet, they think of it as a weight loss diet, but it was originally created back in 1921, over 100 years ago, to stabilize brain chemistry. So to help children, as you said, with intractable seizures. This was back before there were really any useful medications available to treat epilepsy. So this diet was designed to get to come as close to fasting as possible without starving children, because we've known for a very long time that seizures tend to improve when people fast. But you can't fast forever. So the ketogenic diet back then, that original formulation of it, was designed to mimic fasting as much as it could while still allowing some food intake. So this was a very strict ketogenic diet that, four times as much fat to every gram of protein plus carbohydrate combines about 90% of the calories from fat. And it actually has worked. That version and other versions of the diet have shown really quite a bit of success in stabilizing seizures in children and now also in adults. There are multiple randomized controlled trials. There are 13 randomized controlled trials in adults and children demonstrating that people with epilepsy, they can achieve 50% or more seizure reduction in more than 50% of cases. So it's really a very useful an effective treatment for epilepsy. As a psychiatrist for 25 years, I've prescribed anticonvulsant medications in my practice pretty much every day for bipolar disorder, and other kinds of mood disorders, mood instability, anxiety, sleep problems. So of course, it stands to reason that if a diet could be so helpful with epilepsy, could it also be helpful for bipolar disorder where the same medicines, we use the same medicines? And when you look at the biochemistry and the physiology of epilepsy and bipolar disorder, while they look very different on the outside, when you look more closely, you find they have a lot in common. And so it almost makes sense to think of bipolar disorder as a sort of emotional epilepsy.
So beyond bipolar disorder and seizure disorders, for whom would you recommend a ketogenic diet?
This is a really important question because it depends on how strong you want your evidence to be before you feel comfortable doing this. Mm-hmm. So in fact, I'm involved in co-authoring some consensus guidelines, expert consensus guidelines, which we hope to have published in the near future, to just to gather expert perspective. Some of us have a good deal of experience using these dietary interventions in a wide variety of psychiatric conditions. And so some of us feel very comfortable using them, even though we don't have randomized controlled trial level evidence yet to use ketogenic diets in psychiatric conditions. We do have a lot of clinical experience and a lot of scientific support that comes from epilepsy, other fields of neurology, and slowly emerging uncontrolled clinical trials in psychiatric disorders. So that's a long way of getting to the answer to your question, which is, I think it depends on who you are and how comfortable you feel with that level of evidence. But what I like to say is that it makes sense to consider using a ketogenic diet in just about any psychiatric condition in most adults, with the exception perhaps of underweight and anorexia. All other psychiatric conditions, there you could make an argument for the potential utility of the ketogenic diet because it addresses so many of the underlying markers of biological and biochemical dysfunction that we see across a wide variety of psychiatric conditions.
And would it be a short-term intervention or a long-term intervention?
Again, a really important question because we know, for example, in children with epilepsy, some of them only needed to be on the ketogenic diet for a short period of time, say a year or two, and then they were ultimately able to stop the diet and their seizures never recurred. We don't know if adults have that degree of flexibility in terms of their ability to heal and remain healed. We don't have enough long-term experience across enough conditions to be able to say what the chances are in an adult of that being possible. But I can say that in my clinical experience, it's unusual for an adult to be able to stop the diet and not have their psychiatric symptoms return fairly quickly.
So if you have to stay on this long-term, what are the downsides of it and health risks of it?
Yeah, so one of the downsides is adherence to this diet is really challenging. It's so different from how the rest of the world eats. It's really hard to eat a low-carbohydrate diet in a high-carbohydrate world, I like to say. So there's the adherence piece is really challenging for people. And then some of the risks involved in using a ketogenic diet, there are some what are called contraindications to using a ketogenic diet, meaning under certain circumstances, it's not a good idea to proceed. These are actually very few of those. And then there are many conditions, which we would call relative contraindications, where if you're going to proceed, you want to proceed with caution. And the reason for this, and I really think this is the most important downside of the ketogenic diet, is its greatest weakness is also its greatest strength. Because the greatest weakness of the ketogenic diet is that it's a very powerful biochemical and metabolic intervention. And you want a powerful intervention because you want to see results. The problem with it being powerful is the transition period between a customary diet and the ketogenic diet can be fraught with peril if you don't manage it properly. Blood sugar levels can drop, blood pressure can drop, and electrolyte disturbances you can see temporarily. And quite a few people, especially if they change to the diet too quickly and without proper medical supervision, can feel a lot worse before they feel better. And so that transition period, which is really when the brain and body metabolism are seeking to find their new equilibrium, that period can be tricky to manage, especially if there are medications involved. So that's a lot of what I focus on in my training program and why I think it's so important to advise people, for example, if anybody's listening who is thinking about using these diets in their practice, or if there are non-clinicians listening who are thinking about changing their diet to a ketogenic diet, it's really important to learn more first before you change your diet in this way. It can be, for some people, risky. So I do think that is the greatest danger of the diet is not knowing enough before you start it.
So ketogenic diet come in different stripes. You know, there's the 90% fat that you already mentioned, which was the incredibly strict diet that was used in children with epilepsy. And it was very hard for people to follow it. Everything had to be measured and weighed. And, you know, it took a lot of dedication on the part of parents who I think were very motivated because they had children who were so ill. And yet we also have modified paleo that's sometimes considered a ketogenic diet. So it's not a one size fits all, let's say. And I think that is one of the things you point to also in your book, that you may not have to be on the strictest of keto diet. Can you speak to that a little bit in your clinical experience?
Absolutely. When people hear the word ketogenic diet, they may have a particular image in mind or a particular idea of what that diet looks like. But the ketogenic diet, like so many other diets, comes in different versions. And it can be constructed in a very unhealthy way, and it can be constructed in healthier ways. It can be made of plants, it can be made of animals, it can be made of a mixture of the two. And there are lots of different ways you can put it together. But in terms of its metabolic strictness, its metabolic power, there you also see that these diets exist on a spectrum from very strict to very relaxed. And the very strict diet, the so-called 4-to-1 or the 90% diet that was used in children, that's not a diet that I use in my practice, and that's not a diet that's used in adults in general for the most part anymore. And it's often not necessary to do that. What you're really trying to do with a ketogenic diet is you're trying to turn glucose and insulin levels down. Mm-hmm. And when you turn insulin levels down enough, then fat burning turns on and ketone production can then begin. And so that's really the magic of the ketogenic diet. And everyone's a little bit different in terms of what they're going to need to do in terms of their lifestyle changes to get those glucose and insulin levels down to that magic point. Some people, all they need to do is lower their carbohydrate, especially if they're young, physically active, metabolically healthy. Others may need to be much stricter in terms of their carbohydrate restriction, sometimes even protein restriction, more vigorous exercise. Sometimes you need to include some intermittent fasting. And so the reason these diets exist on a spectrum is because everybody's a little different in terms of the degree to which they need to change their carbohydrate intake, for example, and their protein intake and their overall food intake. Sometimes it's just that people are eating too much or too frequently. And so that's why the diet exists in these different variations. But the version that I use in my practice most often is what would be called a modified ketogenic diet. This is usually more like a 1-to-5-to-1, maybe at most a 2-to-1 ratio. So much more relaxed than the classic ketogenic diet.
Could you describe for us what a typical meal plan would look like, a daily meal plan on the diet you most commonly use?
Sure. So it depends on the person's dietary preferences. So whether people prefer a plant-based diet or a Mediterranean-style diet or sort of more meat and vegetable type diet or even a carnivore diet, I meet people where they're at. I like to say I'm nutritionally pro-choice. I want everybody to have a seat at the table for better brain health. And there's so many great things that people can do to improve their brain health, regardless of their dietary preferences. So everyone can access the benefits of ketosis. Let's say that someone's comfortable eating some animal foods and, you know, wants to have a mixed diet of plants and animals. It may look something like, for example, 4 to 6 ounces of salmon in the morning, maybe with some spinach, or maybe it's an omelet with some vegetables cooked in some healthy fat, that kind of a thing for breakfast. Maybe it's a salad with some protein and some olive oil for lunch. And maybe it's a piece of chicken or a piece of steak or a piece of fish for dinner, again, with some vegetables and some healthy fats. It really is very simple. It's essentially you need a source of protein, you need some fat, and if you prefer to include some vegetable, some low-carbohydrate vegetable there, and seasonings, you know, to taste.
But you are not including any kinds of grains or beans?
That is true. It's difficult to include much in the way at all in terms of grains and beans in these diets, because what a ketogenic diet is trying to accomplish is it's trying to get those insulin levels down to that fat-burning point. And all foods raise insulin to some extent, but carbohydrates raise them even more than proteins do. And so there's not a lot of room for carbohydrate in the diet. For most people to get into ketosis, if they're eating a mixed diet, they really are going to want to bring their carbohydrate total grams per day down to something like 20, 25 grams per day in a lot of cases. That doesn't give you a lot of room for grains or legumes. So that's often one of the food groups that people will usually need to set aside or eat very sparingly.
Now, you keep mentioning ketosis. Is it critically important to be in ketosis? And do you have your patients measure that using their urine testing or blood testing, or is ketosis not necessary?
The reason I love that question is because not everybody needs to be in ketosis. And that's exactly why in the book, I offered three different plans. I didn't want people who were not interested in the ketogenic diet or didn't think that, you know, for a lot of people, the idea of a ketogenic diet is just a non-starter. And I understand that. But you know, there's still so many things people can do to improve their brain health, even without going into ketosis. Mm-hmm. And so there's a kind of a lower carbohydrate paleo plan. It's got about 90 grams of carbohydrate per day. And that's the first step. And if that doesn't help people enough, they can continue on to something more like a ketogenic diet. But even when I have people on a low carbohydrate or ketogenic diet, what I've learned through working with lots and lots of people is that not everybody needs to achieve ketosis to get good clinical results, to get meaningful improvement in their mental health. And that's because, my hypothesis is anyway, that I think that's because if all you're doing is bringing your glucose levels down, but you're not bringing your insulin levels down quite enough to go into ketosis, all you're doing is kind of stabilizing your glucose levels. That alone is a major metabolic achievement, and that's going to stabilize not just your blood glucose levels and therefore all kinds of hormonal havoc that can go on in the brain and body, but it's going to stabilize your brain glucose levels. And so much of what's going on in the brain that we think underlies a lot of these psychiatric conditions is a lot of instability in energy delivery. And glucose levels spiking too high in the brain and causing waves of inflammation and oxidative stress and everything else that comes along with that. So just lowering and stabilizing glucose levels, which doesn't require getting into ketosis, that alone can bring tremendous brain health benefits for quite a few people. But then there are certainly many people, especially with more complicated psychiatric conditions, who do need to be in ketosis to see benefits. And we know this because, first of all, there's some clinical research coming out about this that's been published about this. The early clinical trials are showing us that for some conditions, particularly bipolar disorder, there seems to be a really strong correlation between degree of ketosis and degree of clinical benefit. So we're starting to see those signals in certain types of conditions, but in a general practice, which is what I am, a general adult practitioner, I've had many patients who've been able to benefit simply by stabilizing their glucose levels. So I think that it's really important because we're still so early in the research and clinical experience to stay open and curious and see what might be possible for some people with less degrees of dietary restriction.
You mentioned some of the difficulty in transition, and people describe sometimes feeling fluish. They may feel nauseous, they may throw up, they may be constipated, but those symptoms usually resolve. In your experience, how long does it take for them to resolve, and how quickly does someone notice a mental health improvement?
So two great questions. So the first question is, what about this so-called keto flu that people can experience lots of types of discomfort, aches, dizziness, nausea, constipation, all kinds of things can happen, profound fatigue. Those kinds of things can occur, especially when people transition to the diet too quickly. When the glucose and insulin levels are falling very rapidly, say you're going from a typical diet that might contain on average 300 grams of carbohydrate to, if you drop that level of carbohydrate down to say 20 grams all at once, that's a huge shock to the brain and body. And it can be really miserable for people. And that's definitely not what I recommend. So there are lots of things that people can do to ease that transition. I spell a lot of them out in the book, but essentially there are things like gradually lowering your carbohydrate intake, taking your time, supplementing with electrolytes, because a lot of these symptoms have to do with not just a steep drop in glucose and insulin levels, but also some of the fluid shifts and electrolyte shifts that can come along with that if it's too drastic. So electrolyte supplementation support is very useful, and that's spelled out in the book as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, people with many years more than I have of experience mm-hmm. using ketogenic diets, for example, registered dietitian experts like Beth Zupek-Kenia and Denise Potter, who teach a course in this, they say that if you gradually transition your diet, then most of these so-called keto flu symptoms are completely avoidable. And that has absolutely been the case in my practice as well, that if you gradually transition from a typical diet to a ketogenic diet, you can avoid most or all of these discomforts. And many people don't experience any discomfort at all. I think the devil is in the details in terms of how quickly people change their diets and how much they understand about supplementation and medication adjustment. So what I teach in my training program is 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months. So some people feel better, and there are documented cases of this within as little as 3 days. On average, it's more like 2 to 3 weeks. And then there are some people who may need to wait 3 or sometimes even 4 months. Those are less common, those cases. But in most cases, we see a lot of those benefits showing up in the first few weeks. Sometimes people can feel a little uncomfortable. It can take them a little time to learn how to do the diet, to really get the ketones in the therapeutic range, and to figure out how to keep themselves there. So there's a little bit of a learning curve and some physiological adjustments to the diet that have to happen in the first couple of weeks. But after the first couple of weeks, the body and brain, for the most part, have found their new equilibrium. The process continues for the next several weeks. But after the first couple of weeks, things tend to settle down and the body becomes more comfortable burning fat for energy. And it's never burning all fat. There's always some glucose available, even if you're not eating any, because your body will make that for you. But that transition period, we aim to make that transition period as comfortable as possible by going slowly and by managing the medications properly, and also by electrolyte supplementation.
Do we have any information, aside from mental health, of long-term influences of the diet on things like cardiovascular risk, cancer, longevity, risks of neurodegenerative disease? Do we know anything about that?
In terms of protection from future conditions?
Protection or increased risk.
Yeah, so exactly. Both sides of the coin we need to look at. So, you know, we don't have long-term studies. And I think that what we can say, though, is that when you switch to a ketogenic diet, multiple parameters of brain and cardiac health improve, multiple parameters of cellular health improve. So, for example, glucose levels stay in a healthy range. Insulin levels are in a much healthier range. And people, if they have weight to lose, they tend to lose weight more easily on this diet than on some other diets. It depends on how you construct it. But I think really what we're getting at is whether the ketogenic diet offers long-term benefits or just short-term benefits. And I think if we look at the things that improve on a ketogenic diet, triglyceride levels come down, blood pressure in many cases comes down to normal, and HDL cholesterol rises. That's a marker of health. Blood and appetite tends to be better regulated. Glucose levels tend to be in a normal range rather than a pre-diabetic or diabetic range. Many things improve. And so one could hypothesize that because so many different markers of health improve, that hopefully it would provide long-term protection, but there really isn't any way to prove that without doing a 20-year study. And we don't have that kind of data on any diet, but we see multiple markers of metabolic health improving on a properly formulated ketogenic diet.
Andy, you've been a proponent for so many years of the Mediterranean diet and the anti-inflammatory diet, and of course, that's a very different eating pattern than ketogenic. So I'm wondering, what's your reaction as you listen to Georgia point to the benefits of ketogenic diet for people with mental health issues?
Well, I can certainly see the indications for people with significant mental health conditions. I'm a little skeptical about the application of this to a more general patient population. And also, I think I make a strong distinction between slow digesting carbohydrates and rapidly digesting carbohydrates. And I think it is very useful for people to, all people to understand that it's good to limit intake of the quick digesting ones, which is, say, everything made with flour and refined grains and sugars of all kind. On the other hand, I personally think that beans are a healthy food for most people. because not only are they providing us low digesting carbohydrate, but also great quantities of fiber, micronutrients, protein mixed in there. Same for truly whole grains that are cracked or truly whole, not milled into flour. So for me, that might be a more relaxed way of getting at least moving in this direction for people who need to move in that direction.
Yes, I think it's really important for people to have options, especially people who don't feel comfortable, for example, including animal foods in their diet. And there are, of course, quite a few people who feel that way. It's really important for those people to include beans in their diet, for example, as a healthy source of protein. So what I like to emphasize with people is to choose the dietary pattern that feels best to them, that feels right to them, and then modify that to get them into ketosis if they need to be there. For people who are doing really well on, say, a diet that includes grains and beans, they may not ever feel the need to explore this other way of eating. But for people who have tried that way of eating and they haven't gotten the results they're looking for, I think it's worth exploring a different way. The other thing I think is important to say about this is that the nutrients that are in beans, you can get all of those from animal foods and with a lot less carbohydrate. So for people who are carbohydrate sensitive, for people with insulin resistance, for people who have high glucose levels, high insulin levels, insulin resistance, maybe even type 2 diabetes, for those people, it's much harder to include a significant amount of starch in the diet and still keep their glucose and insulin levels in a healthy range. So for all of those people, I think it's really worth exploring this other way. Although there is also calorie restrictions. People can get some benefits. They can go into ketosis, intermittently at least, through a calorie restriction of a mixed diet that includes quite a bit of carbohydrate. So for people who really love to eat that way, they can also access some of these benefits of ketosis, at least intermittently, by changing the pattern, not the foods that they're eating. They can still include some beans, for example, but if they can go in and out of ketosis on a regular basis, that can be a healthier pattern than having your insulin and glucose levels running too high. So I think it depends a lot on our baseline metabolic health, how well we're going to do on the different amounts of carbohydrate.
For people who don't have insulin resistance, so they have normal blood sugars and they don't produce too much insulin, is there still a benefit for a ketogenic diet? Do you still see patients who maybe are slim, who are, you know, if you check their fasting insulin levels, they're normal? Are you still seeing benefits?
That is such a good question. So this is one of the questions I think we really need to explore more deeply, because most of the published research we have so far on ketogenic diets in individuals with mental health conditions is that most of those people are overweight or obese. Mm-hmm. And so the question you're asking is very important. So for example, the study that I helped to publish, which was the work of my friend and colleague, Dr. Albert Denat, who was a psychiatrist practicing in Toulouse, France for 35 years, that study that I helped him publish, he put 31 of his most treatment-resistant patients, you know, with major depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, on a ketogenic diet, mildly ketogenic diet, whole foods, in a hospital setting. What he noticed was that all of the people, the 28 who stayed with the diet more than 2 weeks, all of them improved. But all of these people had at least one marker of poor metabolic health. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in my practice, I certainly have examples of thin people, of, you know, apparently healthy people improving on ketogenic diets. But most of the published clinical research is in people with metabolic dysfunction. And I think the question you're asking is really very important. And I think that's why perhaps we see sometimes, at least I see in clinical practice, some of my patients get benefits without being in ketosis just by bringing those glucose levels down, cleaning up the diet. And as Dr. Weil was saying, getting the junk out, get all those refined carbohydrates out, focus on whole foods principles, you know, the lots of other ways that you can improve the healthfulness of your diet without going into ketosis. And so I think that's really a not well explored area. But we know, for example, there have been 3 randomized controlled trials with the Mediterranean diet improving symptoms of depression in people with moderate to severe depression. And that's really important for people to know, is that there are quite a few people who get benefits just by eating a cleaner, more whole foods type pattern. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to have a lot of junk in it. The refined carbohydrates, the vegetable oils, all of the processed foods. So dietary quality is really important. And some people, that's all they need to do is clean up their diet and follow whole foods principles. And not everybody needs to, and certainly not everybody wants to, you know, follow a ketogenic diet. And so I'm a big fan of whatever works for you. So if it's helping you, please do it. What we all know, I think we can agree on, is there is a dietary pattern out there that we don't want anybody to follow. And it's the pattern that most people are following.
Do we see any benefits of the ketogenic diet in schizophrenia?
Yes. So for example, the study that I helped Dr. Danam publish in 2022, some of those patients had schizophrenia and had it for very many years. And all of those patients who stayed with the diet for 2 weeks or longer improved. Mm-hmm. And then we just had a study published, Dr. Shabani Sethi at Stanford University just published a study which included some patients with schizophrenia. And that was also a mildly ketogenic diet. And she saw significant improvements in their mental health as well. So even in people with serious mental illnesses, we can see using a ketogenic diet really hopeful and encouraging results. Now, these are not double-blind randomized controlled trials. These are pilot studies. And really, these have kind of fueled interest in and funding for more rigorous research around the world, due in no small part to the Baszucki Brain Research Fund and Jan Ellison Baszucki and her work helping all of us try to understand more about how we can use these diets to help people with serious mental illnesses.
How about with autism?
Yeah, so with autism spectrum conditions, there have been a few very small, one was a randomized controlled trial, the other two were not, seeing certain benefits, certain symptom improvements in children with autism, but there hasn't been a study recently. These studies are all fairly mm-hmm. old, but we did see some encouraging benefits in children with autism spectrum conditions that really warrants additional research.
Georgia, do you have any questions for us?
Oh my goodness. I'd really love to know, because your work is focused on, and you know, I've admired your work for a long time because dietary quality is really important. As for so long, people have been skeptical of the notion that what we eat matters to our mental health and to our physical health. And so the work that you have been doing has really, and I mean this sincerely, it's really helped people to understand that there is a very tight connection and a really important connection between what we eat, how our cells function, how we feel physically and emotionally. As I was saying right before we came on, right before we kind of turned the microphones on, I was alluding to this, is that, you know, my mother has been a big fan of your work, Dr. Well, for a long time, and she has many of your books. And I think these principles of dietary quality are so important. They really need to form the foundation of whatever diet a person is choosing to follow. I think that the different communities in terms of Mediterranean diets, ketogenic diets, any kind of whole foods dietary pattern, there's a lot of overlap in terms of what we're recommending. But I think one area of concern that I have in the ketogenic diet space is sometimes we're not all paying enough attention to dietary quality. And I think dietary quality is really important.
My main piece of dietary advice to everyone is to try to reduce or preferably eliminate consumption of refined, processed, and manufactured foods. It's that simple.
Exactly. Please start there. And that's going to bring so many people so many benefits. There's a whole spectrum, an array of dietary interventions. You can use degrees of dietary restriction and degrees of carbohydrate intake, high, medium, low, protein intake, and different types of fat. But start with dietary quality. Yep. Because most of what's happened to us, I firmly believe this, most of what's happened to us in the last 50, 60 years has had to do with just the ultra refining and kind of junkification of our diets.
Absolutely, yeah.
Whole foods principles, no matter what else, are so fundamental to human health. So that's one of the things I argue in the book. I think marrying these two worlds, the metabolic quality of the diet and the nutritional quality of the diet, I think people can get benefits from either or. But for some of us, we're going to need to do both to get where we're trying to go. But wherever you can start there, I guess is my point.
Thank you so much for joining us on Body of Wonder, and thank you for your work with people who have serious mental health challenges and the pioneering work that you're doing with ketogenic diet.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much for helping people understand the crucial importance of dietary quality, nutritional quality, and the relationship between food, mental health, and physical health. Thank you.